The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dreen.
Hey, welcome back. Producers Podcast time. Thanks for checking it out. Thanks for your time. And I say that a little extra because, yeah, we talked a little bit longer this time. You might notice the file or the runtime is a little bit longer than normal. I think it was worth it. Personally, I really think it was worth it. Graham Judd is the guest, as you've probably seen. If you don't know who Graham is, in the States, I don't know how you rank them, but he's definitely one of the top promo voices in the entire country. He's actually up in Canada. We get into that in the episode. One of the very, very top tier working pros in the entire country, for sure. If you're outside the States, it's possible you haven't heard him, and it's also possible that a lot of people haven't heard his name before. What's cool is he's a hell of a nice guy. He's still, after basically being damn near the top for years at this point, still has that attitude of, hustle, 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 keep working. A lot of cool stuff came out of this interview with Graham, and I'll say a hell of a nice guy. He is Canadian. It's a stereotype that Canadians are all nice. I know that's not true. There's got to be some just dicks out there, right? I just haven't run into one yet, but I know they exist. There's a mean Canadian out there somewhere. Damn it, I'll find him or her. But not today. Let's see here. A couple links to check out. GrahamJudd.com if you want to be investigating this dude and see what he's all about. GrahamJudd.com. GrahamJudd.com. He is on Twitter. I'll throw it out there, though. He says it's boring and it's his personal stuff. But at Graham Judd, if you'd like to go follow the dude. Let me direct you to two links that I have on the podcast page. So if you get this in iTunes or somewhere else and you don't normally hit my website, you might want to check out a little YouTube video I put up there from TMZ. I won't say more about it. We get into it in the show. Also a link, a write-up on his studio by the studio company. Again, I won't talk too much about it. We get into it plenty on the show. But for the super geeks, the real audiophiles, the tech geeks, that's definitely something you want to check out. As far as voiceover talents studios, his is one of the cooler ones out there, I would say, and he's working with some pretty solid gear. And by the way, Graham is not just a guy who talks. He's, neck deep in the audio world, a very capable producer, I'll say. Oh, and he started way long ago. I won't give it away right now. Let's just say he wasn't talking for a living. Let's see here. Real quick to promote what's coming up, I have at least two episodes that absolutely will happen. I think sooner than later. A guy who I've wanted to get on the show for a long time and finally working that out, Scott Matthews, another voiceover talent, big-time radio imaging talent. And got a little special place in my heart with him because he was sort of the enemy voice on the when I was in a competitive situation in Dallas. Between the two country stations, and he's just amazing, just stellar. So Scott Matthews will be on the show, and I'm going to bring on, speaking of country, one of the top imaging producers, but definitely one of the top country imaging producers in Earth, Terry Phillips. Actually, he's been on the show before, but more of on the video side. He was doing a video for radio project. So anyway, Terry Phillips up in Detroit, he'll be on the show again. Actually, an old friend of mine now, so that'll be a fun one. I know what Terry can bring to the table. That'll be a good episode, but be prepared for some tech nerdery on that one, because Terry knows his way around everything in the studio. So that's what's coming up for right now. Let's get into it. Like I said, you will absolutely, if you're in the States, you will absolutely recognize the voice of the guest. Otherwise, huge talent, super humble, hard worker. He's big time, folks. He is Graham Judd.
Critics are calling the new Fox series Pitch inspirational, game-changing, the best new drama of the fall. New Life in Pieces, CBS this Monday. We take you to the paranormal with all new episodes of My Haunted House.
Bros. The Kardashians begins Sunday, May 1st, only on E! DreamWorks Animation presents an all-new Netflix original series, Elementary, Person of Interest, the new prime crime lineup. Weeknights this fall on WGN America.
Mother is the most talked about movie in years.
They've come here to see me.
USA Today raves. It will blow your mind.
Critics are cheering.
Good evening, Zootopia!
Zootopia is one of the best Disney animated films since The Lion King.
Wherever life takes you.
Let's go somewhere. Anywhere in the world.
Follow your heart.
Show him how good life can be.
Based on a best-selling novel.
You up to anything that makes me want to get up in the morning?
Me before you.
All right, so there you go. You know that voice. Literally everyone listening to this podcast knows that voice. My guest today, the incomparable Graham Judd. Graham, you sound like an awesome dude, but thanks for joining the show, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, Canadian, huh?
Yeah, we're going to go there first, huh? Okay, yeah.
I like to try to throw something out. He's like, oh, so he started there.
Okay, all right. Set the tone early. I appreciate it. I'll get my backup. No, proud Canuck, yeah. Man. I live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I was born in just outside of Toronto, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and moved to Calgary when I was 2, and I've been here ever since, so...
Now, my Canadian geography isn't great, but that's west?
Yeah, west-ish, yeah. It's not west-ish. Quite central. It's west of central, but it's not full west coast. So we're sort of a straight shot north of Montana.
Okay, cool. No French, though, right?
They tried. it's not common around these parts, but, in junior high and high school, they encourage you to take it as sort of an option, but, I've forgotten everything.
Said.
And, if you asked me for some French, I would let you down big time.
No, I won't do that. I won't do that. Okay. Here's another one. I was thinking of starting this way, but you might be the first guest I've had on that was featured on TMZ.
Ah, yes.
Maybe. So that was cool.
That was a really surreal experience. I swear, we spent about 5 minutes with this guy, and he said he was from TMZ, but he certainly did not look like he was from TMZ. More like, he found a video camera in the alley, right, or something. But
or on the back of a truck.
Yeah, kind of thing, And so I swear the entire interaction, I will say this, they were very kind to me when they edited the piece because...
They were...
For the most part, it's me staring blankly at him and then turning to my left, who I was with, my agent Jessica and my manager Jonna, she's off frame, mm-hmm. but... kept thinking they're punking me. They had to have just set this up. There's no way this is real. So I spend the entire time. They cut it all out, but most of the time I'm staring at her, going, "You're messing with me. There's no way this is actually happening." So yeah, that was very, very surreal. It was I thought for sure. There's this poor guy. He's having a slow celeb night. We were at a restaurant where, my understanding was Taylor Swift might have been there the night before, or the Kardashians are probably there all the time.
I've been there, actually. I've been
Katsuya,
to that one.
It's a happening spot. We were on a Monday night, so it happened to be pretty quiet. But
I was going to say, I'll throw the video up on the site so people can check it out. People are pretty aware of Google, so they can find it.
But, it's on mine, too.
I saw it kind of start, and I'm like, whoa, that's cool, but where are they going to go with this? And they just made you look cool. I mean, they didn't screw with you. They just made you look cool on the show. It was neat. It was really
again,
cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure who I have to send the check to, but they were very kind to me, and I know they aren't that with everybody, so it could have very well been something. But I'm also not, anybody that anyone really knows or truly cares about in terms of like the general public. So it was more just kind of a quirky thing. I'm sure it was filler content again, slow news day, right? So
I guess, man, but that's cool.
Hey, so I'm happy to have it. It's a nice promo piece. I'm happy to have it. It's kind of fun.
Oh, absolutely. Let's start a little techish side.
Sure.
'Cause I know you're a tech guy, but your background, in fact, I kind of double checked this. You have a tiny little bit of background in radio. So tell us exactly how you started. What were you doing in the beginnings and how that led you to voiceover?
Okay, so I'll try and keep it brief. So if you go back far enough, I'm in theater and whatnot in high school. You go back even farther, I was in the Calgary Boys Choir. You know, music, recording, performance is all sort of a part of my kind of my makeup. After high school, ended up in a band, a boy band. We were, you know, did that for about 2 years. You know, the takeaway with the band was wrong place, wrong time. It was, the pop stardom was sort of never in the cards. But what was cool was we got opportunity to record in some pretty major recording studios. We even had a week in Los Angeles. We recorded at Capitol Records. We recorded with David Foster. You know, he invited us to his home studio in Malibu to listen to sort of a final mix. And, you know, I was 19 at the time or something. You know, it was like totally trippy from Calgary. Like what, you know, that never happens. So that was like the very early, I didn't know what I was experiencing, but I knew I liked the environment. I loved being in studios. I loved the process of creating music at the time. And,
You say the name of the band?
Off Limits.
Okay.
With a Z.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. Anyway,
and three Fs.
Moving past that. After that, early 20s, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And it was actually my mom that was sort of pushing me to get back into some sort of education after the band had sort of folded. And she, it was her suggestion, actually, get into broadcasting. You know, you have an interest in the performance, but, you know, obviously being a theatrical actor in any city is challenging, let alone Calgary, Canada. You know, it wasn't necessarily a hotbed for making a solid living. So, she suggested broadcasting, and she was... she herself was faculty at the university, one of the universities here, and in the nursing program, and she knew the broadcasting department, so she set up an interview, and that's sort of the beginning of this. So I enrolled in the program, and it was sort of first year radio, second year television. It was sort of an overview of news and production and creative. All sort of rolled into one, so you didn't really have to know what you wanted at the beginning, but come out the other end, you hopefully had a really good sense of whether you were going to be a reporter, if you're going to be in production, if you're going to be a creative writer for commercials and things like that. So that was a hugely beneficial time in my life, because I got a exposure to things that were very interesting and sort of parallel with the music recording and the studio stuff. And that was when I got my first job as an overnight operator at a radio station. So local, top 40.
And board operator.
Board operator. Another, literally before automation, I was the guy that kept the music going overnights, just no crack in the mic. So I was
never opened a mic though.
But I was never on air, and I'm thankful for that, because quite honestly, I'm not an on air guy. I'm a performer. I'm good with, you know, if you give me a script and I can record it and screw it up a bunch of times before the final hits
sure.
the air.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not the guy that comes up with the stuff on the, you know, the, I have much respect for that. That's a completely different animal. Being good on air and being an entertainer and someone that can kind of come up with stuff off the cuff. That's just never sort of clicked with me. So, but production, you know, there was opportunity to do sort of, modest commercial production and things at the radio station, as an extension of doing the operating stuff. So, that was my first kind of broadcasting job. It happened while I was overnights and evenings and weekends and stuff for them, while I was still at college. And I would say the voiceover thing sort of clicked. We had a guest speaker by the name of Paul Boucher, who's also another Calgary-based voiceover artist. And at the time, he had, I don't know how long he had been freelance voiceover, but he himself was a former jock who decided voiceover was the answer. So he was actually a guest speaker when I was in college, and that was sort of my light bulb moment. You know, he and I have stayed friends, and I've told him this on many occasions. You know, he was sort of that, like, oh, you can get paid to do that. Okay, sweet. Okay, that sort of made sense. So that was the, you know, throwing back to the performance and the acting and that kind of stuff that I had enjoyed so much, you know, in my youth. So
first paid voiceover gig?
Oh, good question. I dabbled in, as we all do, how do you actually find clients and whatnot. So I spent a short period of time working on a site where I was listed by first name only, and I was making, I think it was $10 a script or something like that. Like a month or two. I mean, and I would bang them out, and it was like, oh, sweet. By the end of the month, I felt, you know, I'd done 30 spots or something and made $300 and thought, oh my goodness, it's beer money. That's sweet. That's $300 more than I did, you know, had at the beginning of the month. And then, luckily I didn't spend much time on that path. And I had someone sort of pull me aside. It might've even been Paul Boucher, who said, you know, there's a certain level and you got to sort of hold the bar and charge what worth. Like, let me quick you and bring you up to speed. So, you know, I maybe did that for a month or two, realized that that wasn't really the greatest way to sort of build a foundation for a successful business. Sure, you make a few bucks here and there, but it was a lot of work for what I now know is, not what it should be. So.
And so after that, then, what was the next transition? Did you start hustling and contacting clients? Did you get representation?
Yeah, I produced a pretty, you know, a local commercial demo and sent it out. There's a few shops in town, audio post places that do radio and audio for television here, even in Calgary. So, I would say that's probably where I started. I had a fellow by the name of Brad Belcher, who actually ended up becoming my boss. I moved to sort of a medium market just outside of Calgary for my first my first job outside of broadcast school, which was in television writing, producing for sort of a local news channel. So I was doing not only news promos and things for the station, but we were also sort of the creative hub for local businesses. So we did, you know, Jack's car dealership, TV ads and things like that. Ended up being booked by Brad Belcher at the time it was GGRP Alberta, but it's now the Forge Audio Company. He hired me to do some, I think it was 4 radio spots, and it was pay was like $750 or something. So it was like $200 a spot or something, you know, whatever.
So more than $10.
Definitely more than ten a spot. And that was sort of the, oh, okay, so I'm good enough, I can be picked for jobs where the, you know, the rate is closer to what it should be. Now, this was a local, you know, kind of Calgary and area only spot. So at the time, it was pretty reasonable pay. So I ended up coming to Calgary from where I was living at the time and doing the session with him, and then hung around afterwards and thought, you know, like, this is that studio feeling. This is that, I wasn't just recording at my little condo with, you know, my little laptop and a microphone. I was back in a real recording studio, probably for the first time since being with the band. So, you know, that was like, oh, yeah. I miss this. I miss being in audio only. Yeah. And so I sort of hung around after the session and asked him if he needed help and if he, you know, if he ever wanted to sort of not be at the time he was a producer, engineer, you know, all things, he was wearing all the hats. So I thought, well, why don't you become the producer and I could be your engineer? And, that was sort of the transition back to doing more audio and becoming more of a focused audio engineer, within Pro Tools and really learning the tools of the trade specifically for audio production. And then, you know, even more specifically, voiceover. So learning ISDN and preamps and compression and EQ and all that kind of stuff. So.
Sure. Let me, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead too much, but I'm curious if there was a job or some situation that was a big leap, you know, like, okay, so now, this is big. It's going to be full time. It's going to be real, 100% voiceover, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, I was always trying to be, you know, I wanted to be cautious about it. Obviously, I had dreamt that I would pay the bills completely and that it could be my full time endeavor. The thing about the way I had organized the engineer job was that, you know, sort of in between sessions for Brad and his company, he was cool with me running the voiceover stuff. So I sort of had best of both worlds, which isn't, mm-hmm. you know, it's like so I think back and like, wow, it was sort of like the perfect scenario where I had a day job, you know, that was sort of covering the basics and allowing me to also be kind of hands-on with all this gear. And then in between stuff, I could bang out my own voiceover work.
Sure.
And so I probably hung on to my day job longer than most would, just because it was too convenient to be able to do, yep. you know, stick with that while still doing the voiceover stuff. So, a couple of things. So there was a few sort of big gets, commercially. There was one sort of national ad campaign that ran in the States too, which was for Hampton Inn and Suites, the hotel chain, which was,
sure.
You know, that was back almost 10 years ago, probably now. But what that allowed for me to have was this sort of national, a piece of national work that I could sort of use to garner some major market attention. So I took mm-hmm. that and found, I ended up finding Jonna Gottlieb, who's now to this day, she's my manager. At the time, she was offering voiceover consulting from a business perspective. What I liked about when I reached out to Jonna, she's in New York, and I thought her background is a promo voiceover agent. So I'm not sure where along the line I decided promo and trailer was sort of right for me. But I knew that it didn't really exist in Calgary, and it definitely, you know, barely existed in Canada for promo opportunities. I knew that if I was going to do promo, I wanted to do it. I would have to do it out of New York or LA and, you know, have connections in those markets. So, reached out to Jonna, and at the time she was literally just consulting, kind of career consulting. So she had this sort of history of being a voiceover agent. She wasn't at an agency anymore and was sort of consulting. And so I was happy to kind of pay her to better understand what it is being outside the market. How does the industry mm-hmm. work? Well, really from the business side, not interested in another voiceover talent who also coaches. I don't necessarily need their perspective right now. I need someone that's sort of uncolored and it's just the business side.
Right.
Which was hugely valuable. That was back in 2009. I originally reached out to her, and it was sort of a bit of a divine connection. I mean, we worked together for a number of months. She helped me produce my first promo demo, and then she sort of pulled me aside after we did the demo, and she's like, "Listen, I don't know why, but I feel like I want to manage you. mm-hmm. There's something about you that I don't want to just, you know, send you off into the world. I feel like I can help kind of cultivate something." So, you know, again, that was sort of like the strangest, you know, I reached out to her with no expectation. Certainly at the time she was not managing people, so I was not calling her as a manager. You know, I didn't necessarily need anything from her other than her expertise that I was willing to pay for.
Did you ever actually move out of Canada? Did you ever live in the States?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, I
didn't think so.
I teetered. I you know, and we can sort of get to, there was a point where, you know, we were kind of contemplating it. But you know, so the thing that was sort of the beginning of the, you know, transitioning to full-time voiceover was she introduced me to my first agent in New York. And on my second audition, after being with the agency for, I think it was only 2 weeks, I was selected as the voice of Nickelodeon.
Okay.
So this was, again, early 2009. It was late 2000, like fall of 2009. They were rebranding to Nick, and they were looking for, it wasn't me completely, but they were looking for a sort of a younger complement to two other voices they already had used, you know, and so that was like the first big promo gig. That sort of set it all off, and and it was sort of right place, right time, and sort of a lot of work, a lot of effort, but also, you know, a little bit of luck. So, but then from that, you turn it into more. So we use that as a, sort of a foot in the door with LA agencies. You know, we're able to sort of say, hey, you know, got this guy, he's now doing Nickelodeon. Would you like to meet him? And I was able to sort of take some meetings and end up with an LA agent. So,
I'm interested in your kind of your trajectory, especially at that point. As you look back, I mean, you know, and no hyperbole, when people turn on the television today, they're going to find you somewhere. You know, you're doing very well. I'll just be the first to tell you that, Graham.
Thanks, man.
You're doing very well. But no, your career trajectory at that point, did you feel like it blew up, or did you still feel a little of that? All right, I got to keep hustling, got to keep working. It's a slow burn.
It is always a slow burn, and you always have to keep at it. There is even, you know, some on the outside might look at where I'm at and think, man, he's got it made. But man, I got to tell you, there's this every day is, you know, what are we going for next? What else can we be looking for? You got to stay fresh. You know, so, you know, tip number one, never get complacent. Never think that you're sort of a made person. You know, you get that big gig and, you know, that every big gig is exciting. It's an absolute honor to be chosen and all those things, but it's also going to go away. It will end, whether it's 10 years and you have the pleasure of being, you know, a brand voice of a TV network, or you're just on a show for CBS or Fox, or, you know, you get a chance to be the promo voice for a show. That show might get canceled. It might not. They might change their creative focus and just try someone new. And, you know, there's so many things we can't control as the talent that you just have to be prepared for things to sort of ebb and flow and come and go. I mean, you get a big job and then you lose a big job just as easily. So, I've been fortunate. I've been had some opportunities afforded me that I realize not everyone will have the chance to, you know, to have gigs like some of the ones I have. But it's all been on purpose, you know. So again, it's so Nickelodeon turned into LA representation, and then LA representation after some floundering and finding my way and trying this agency and that didn't work, and trying this agency, I ended up. I've been with SBV. We were just talking to Jessica, my agent, yesterday. I think it's been 8 years now. And, you know, it's like you sort of seek out these relationships. Let me be very clear. What I bring to the table is only a portion of the equation. You need people that are finding the opportunities, that are, you know, putting together good deals, that are getting you the at-bats. I mean, it's literally, it's at-bats. You need as many opportunities as possible to book, you know, a handful of things. And so, you know, the critical thing for me has been having the right team. So Jonna is sort of at the, you know, she's, as my manager, she's like a business partner. She and I talk daily. You know, I don't make any real big decisions without sort of bouncing things off of her. It's critical to have people like that that are sort of unbiased. They're not other talent. They're not, you know, competitors, but well-meaning peers and whatnot. You know, it's really someone that's, you know, that benefits when you benefit, and you know, has knowledge on, you know, and expertise in a certain part of the business that I don't have. I don't have 30 plus years of knowledge of, you know, being an agent and representing talent and stuff, but she does. She brings that to the table. So, you know, she and I are a great duo. And then, you know, agents and other representation is on top of that. And everyone, you know, you find your way. I've had people that I've tried for a number of years that, you know, I had high hopes for, and relationships sort of didn't, and work didn't materialize. So you got to try something else, you know, and that's the other part of it too, is you have to be willing to, you know, find the right fit. Not everyone, you know, there's a lot of great people, but, and working, especially on the sort of the agency side, but not everyone is going to be the right fit for you. So I spent some time finding a great home. I feel very, very, well looked after at SBV. And, you know, this is my sort of midway through my eighth season on CBS, which is, which was sort of the first big get that they, you know, first big booking they had for me. So,
sure.
You know, and it's sort of an ongoing thing. And they've had me on, I wish I had kept a tally of how many shows I've been on. And this is where you sort of feel like, wow, I'm completely, you know, feel like a bit of a, you know, a totally lucky duck here, because, you know, CBS, you get on one show, you do a good job, but the show doesn't do well. You could just as easily be forgotten and not be on any more shows. And I've been fortunate that CBS has thought of me for new projects and has had me on, you know, at least something, you know, pretty much at all times over the last eight seasons, which is crazy. So I'm very thankful, but obviously I'm supporting their business by being available and giving a good product. So it's not totally, you know, one-sided.
And to get over to the sort of the training side, how much coaching did you have either early on or have you done in your career?
I have a coach that I work with every 2 weeks, even to this day, still. Specifically for me, that is more on the movie trailer side, because in the last couple of years, that's been sort of my dream/ primary focus is sort of making inroads on that side, which is a very tough nut to crack. Promo will always be something that's that I very much enjoy doing, and will continue to do. And the nice thing about promo is it's sort of the daily stuff, and then the you know, or weekly opportunities, and you know, it's ongoing is what I mean to say. And then the trailer stuff sort of comes and goes, and you get opportunities, and then it sort of goes away, and you know, you're sort of always singing for your supper for the trailer stuff. So it keeps it really exciting and fresh, right? Because they're such short-lived campaigns, and a movie, they promote it for a few weeks, and then the movie comes out, and then sort of, you know, it goes away, and you have to find the next one.
I would imagine that had to be very key in the audition process, because it's one thing to get access to the jobs or to the work, but I mean, you got to nail auditions, and obviously you're a person who figured out how to do well with those early on. Is that, I mean, that's probably the case?
I would say the biggest thing, yes, as a self-directing and being confident and knowing your abilities and all is imperative. You can't, you can hear when someone's not fully confident in something that they're doing. And those that are confident will somehow stick out, you know, so, you know, confidence is critical. I would say that the biggest thing that the training does for me, at least, is, it's reinforcement that my instincts are correct for me. And what I mean by that is I've spent, you know, early on, I would say that I sort of knew what I was doing enough, and I got some opportunities and, you know, made something of them. The last two or three years, I would say I'm really trying to find what is my sound, what is my authenticity and my sort of authentic sound and self, right? You know, everything that you hear now is rooted in reality for me. It's not sort of a read that I'm doing. Oh, I think promos sound like this, so I'm doing a promo sound.
Let me clarify real. So you're kind of saying in the last two or three years, when I hear you doing a promo for E or CBS, you feel like you're delivering it more as an authentic you than maybe you previously had been doing?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So, while you still have to find sort of the energy that works for the product. So, you know, if it's a Two Broke Girls, you know, high energy sort of sitcom, there's still sort of an expected energy level, you know, needed.
Absolutely.
To kind of sell the
right
product, sell the show. Something like Young Sheldon, which I'm on right now for CBS, is a much calmer, kind of warmer, kind
many
of
notches
good
down. Yeah.
You know, it's very close to being conversational, almost. You know, in promo, you know, as conversational as you can get with promo. You know, and I would say that rather than worrying what I think someone wants me to sound like, I'm now able to be confident in what my sound is and just throw stuff out there when the auditions come. And why it's critical is, listen, I book way less than I audition for. You know, sometimes it can be hundreds of auditions to one booking. But that one booking is going to pick you because they want me and no one else can bring that.
And we're talking in the promo world?
Yeah, promo and trailer. Or commercial. Yeah. I mean, I really think it applies to sort of all the things. And sort of as, the one thing we can do as talent is just be authentic. You know, and it's such an obvious thing, and everyone says it. Be yourself, and whatever, you know. It's easier said than done. It's taken me,
yes.
Like I said, 2009. So what am I 9 years doing? Kind of national promo work, and
you're saying that only in the last 2 or 3 years do you feel like you're finally really being you?
Yeah.
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 That's interesting.
And every day more and more so. And so the training allows you to have that like professional sounding board and someone that in my case, the fellow I train with biweekly, his day job is a movie trailer sort of producer. So, you know, he knows what he needs and what the industry requires and what the mm-hmm. trends are and whatnot. And I can sort of, it's like an opportunity to do reads for him like their jobs, like he would be directing me if it was, a project he was working on. But it's an opportunity to have him, for me to sort of test my instincts. So we read a variety of different copy and typically stuff that's already on air, and we just sort of copy down the words mm-hmm. I try and take what would I do with this? What would be a valid choice, still work for the genre and stuff? I'm not trying to necessarily reinvent the wheel, but, I recognize also that I'm not the big, epic movie, big barrel chested, sound that a movie trailer, we've become sort of used to hearing, right? There's a lot of guys
basically
that do that.
The five guys that do the
there's a number of
trailers,
there's a number of terrific guys that names come to mind, and I'm fans of all of them, and the reality is that they sound very different than me. I'm coming with mm-hmm. a very different approach, especially if I do my own thing and not try and do, oh, this is my version of a Howard Parker or Ashton Smith or Scott Rummel or all of those guys.
Sure.
They're already doing that. So my best shot at booking and staying and having a shot at staying in the business is sort of coming up with my own thing and have that win out.
Why do you want to go after trailer work so much?
I don't know. And being honest, it's sort of like that's the one piece that like probably came like in terms of dreamland, if you do voiceover, what aspect of voiceover really sort of drew you in. I've always really been a fan of movie trailers.
Let me put a footnote on my question real quick keep answering. But in my mind, the film industry has changed drastically. TV is getting bigger and bigger. A lot of the art is just getting a lot bigger and better on television. But also in the trailer world, to me, it doesn't seem like it's the way it used to be. You don't have the trailer voice explaining the movie for 30, 60, 90, 2 minutes. Oftentimes it's a rated PG. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So it feels like the trend in the trailer industry would make you think, maybe I shouldn't waste my time on that.
Absolutely. No, I think there's a lot of truth to that statement. There is an awful lot of just title and rating. It's hard to compete. And when it's just the title of the movie and rating, well, let's just put one of the normal guys on it because why would we bother getting creative with our voice choice when it's literally just the title and the rating and we know who does a good job and just give it to them.
Yeah, you're doing tags at that point.
So
yeah.
Again, absolutely. That's the industry has shifted. What little I have learned about it in the last few years is certainly not what it used to be. I think if you would ask any one of those guys, they would tell you the same, and they would have the track record to say, here's what it used to be like. Obviously I wasn't mm-hmm. around during those times. For me, trailer is sort of an extension of promo, and it's just other opportunities. And maybe what I like about it, is sort of the immediacy. I like the rush. A lot of times it's sort of quick turnaround, yeah. And it's it's condensed. So you've got maybe 3-4 weeks of if you're lucky enough to be on a campaign, you work intensely for, you know, leading up to the release of the film, and then it sort of falls off. So it's like this insane rush to sort of to satisfy and to do a good job, and then you're onto something else, and you sort of can reinvent yourself each time. So each movie is sort of every chance you get. I'm hoping that I don't necessarily just find one area of movie trailers and only do one sound, and oh, that's that guy that does that one read. I'd love to have the variety, just like my promo stuff. I've had the opportunity to read really dramatic stuff, and then a lot of comedies, yeah. And somewhere in between, reality and action and things like that. So I think the promo stuff is awesome because it's ongoing. It's a lot of fun, but you know, you get into a groove with a show, and week over week, it's not like you're trying a different sound or something like that. So maybe probably the most interesting thing about trailer is just the rate at which you're sort of on to the next project.
We don't need to just talk exact financials, though. I think a lot of this is sort of set rate, you know, where I don't know what rate structure you're in. It doesn't matter. If you do a trailer for a big film and you say it's about 3 weeks worth of work, you might do a number of sessions, you're doing a variation, whatever. What's the money for that like versus, you know, is it worth a week's worth of promos for one TV show? Is it a month? Is it one day? You know, give me some apples to apples comparison.
Well, yet again, I mean, I'm on the inward, I'm trying to make my way into the industry. So I'm not the expert on all the different. I haven't been on a number of campaigns. I can tell you, you know, when I have been on a few things, you know, it's a range. Some movies are smaller and, you know, they do fewer pieces, fewer spots, fewer trailers. Let's say broadcast television promo, because all the cable network, like everyone sort of pays depending on what, everyone sort of has a slightly different setup. But the broadcast networks are all the same. So there's a union, there's an AFTRA rate for spots and tags. And, you know, it's the math gets pretty simple when you just know, okay, yes. I read this many things. This is what the rate is. Moving on. I would say that, you know, a really good paying movie could probably rival a full season of a broadcast show.
Okay. Interesting.
Just roughly.
Okay.
You know, so you do like September to May of a broadcast show could be, you know, sort of equal to a really high paying movie.
Yep. That is more than I thought it would be. So that's cool. Yeah.
And it's, you know,
and I know it varies. It varies
totally.
By talent,
it's gonna vary by, you know, mostly number of spots. I think that's gonna be the, especially because it is union work. There is that set minimum. You know that it's definitely gonna be at least this. I'm being coy. I don't even know the numbers off the top of my head. So
it's okay. I don't ever talk specific financials. It's not the point of the show. You know.
Yeah, but I think so. You know, there's obviously a financial component that is interesting to me. But I don't want it to seem like, oh, well, I don't care about the money. I just love doing the work. Obviously, it's nice to make a living. I make a very comfortable living, so I'm.
I saw your studio. I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah,
in a minute.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. I've worked hard and I continue to work hard, and sort of there's a ton of investment that's gone into it, both from a technological and a recording studio space standpoint, also travel to being out of market. Mm-hmm. It's been critical to spend time in LA and New York and make relationships and shore up relationships that started remotely, but it's critical to get some face time. I think we're still it's still a people to people business. So I think people are wise to get some face time. So like I said, we sort of skipped past it, but I never moved to LA or New York, but I try and make it down a couple of times a year, at least to LA, which is where most of the work's sort of concentrated for me now. And, Promax is in New York in June coming up, and, I'll definitely be in town for that. And, you know, it's just good to get out and be social with the people that you work with and make sure they know that you're a real human, not just this disembodied voice. Mm-hmm. I think there's some value in that. Would it has it meant that I haven't been, that I haven't lost jobs because I travel these places? I don't think it's that, but you know, for me, it's important to sort of get to know these, the people that you work with on a regular basis.
What is something, and you can, let me ask it two ways, answer both ways, in the promo world that you're not doing that you'd like to be doing? And then what is something in voiceover and trailer isn't, you can't say trailer because I know you're already doing that, that you're not doing that you want to get into?
Oh, interesting. Listen, I'm a huge fan of HBO stuff.
Okay.
I would love to do specifically,
there
you know,
you
HBO. I don't even know if they have much voiceover. I mean, that's the challenge is some of these cable networks have chosen, you know, it's way more artistic to have no voiceover. So
what about narration? It makes me think of Liev Schreiber. I know you're so ingrained in the promo world, but have you done long form narration? I love what he does on HBO and sports.
I've dabbled, you know, I certainly auditioned for it and would do it if, you know, if someone picked me for it.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
So it's I wouldn't turn my nose at narration. I would say that throughout my career, I've worked with very talented people, both when I was in, you know, as a writer, producer and whatnot in television, and you know, which was very shortly lived, mostly because the people I worked with, they dreamt of doing that work. They had been working up to it their entire lives. One of my best friends to this day, I met at the TV station, and he was someone that, you know, elementary school on, he knew he was going to be a writer, producer, and work in television. Mm-hmm. And that kind of passion, that's what I had for audio and more laser-pointedly voiceover. And I have a much respect, and I don't really want to sort of compete because I know what it takes to compete, the energy and the time and everything to compete with the stuff I am interested, truly interested in, like obsessive about. I know that there are people out there that are like that with narration, with audiobooks, with animation.
For sure.
And so it's sort of out of respect and admiration for that passion and that drive for those people that I go, you know what, I don't think I have what it takes to really do, you know, narration would probably be that sort of, you know, promo trailer, narration commercial would sort of be on the list for me. But again, it's like that, I know people that do it and do it so well and love the long form and, you know, are amazing at cold reading a lot of words. And for me, it's just like my attention span lends itself more to this, the quick wham, bam, here's a promo,
yeah,
you know,
you.
30 seconds or less kind of thing. And so, you know, while I'm, you know, works well because that's the stuff I want to pursue anyway. It's kind of like, you know, I would do it if someone heard my demo or heard an audition and said, he's the right guy. You know, absolutely, I would do it.
What about, is there someone, maybe it's in the promo world or really anywhere, that you still think about a read you heard, a talent you heard doing something in related to voiceover that still sticks out as like, I mean, that guy or gal just nailed it?
Oh, geez. There's just so many people that I admire and say
it's hard
tough
to bring up names.
It's really hard to pick just one. I have and you say a few names and the others get left off. I'm inspired and aspire to be like a number of people.
Not that he is the person, but I think a lot of people would go back to like a Don LaFontaine, for example.
Absolutely.
I
watched that five guys in a limo thing like crazy. You know, back when I was just dreaming about this, you know, I was obsessed about that kind of stuff and Mark Elliott and stuff. Like, listen, that like the classic Disney stuff, like all the, you know, for a limited time out of the Disney vault, like that kind of stuff. That was Mark Elliott. Like, he was the voice of my childhood, basically. You know, so I would say I loved, let's turn it into who would I love to sort of meet and to like really fangirl over. Hal Douglas, to me, he had that whimsical, like, oh, this is going to be a warm and happy experience. There's something about his trailer reads that, you know, in a world, he just had this really kind of whimsical, warm, but calming kind of approach. I don't know. There's something, definitely stuff like that. Even that comedian movie trailer thing he did where he was in a booth and they were kicking him. He was being fired and no, I like it in here. And stuff like that to me, those are those little like, you know, viral video things that are sort of unrelated to their day job, and they were totally professional, but they had, you know, they were willing to sort of make fun of themselves, you know, and not take themselves so seriously. And the same thing with Don and the Five Guys limo thing. And
when he was on, was it Family Guy?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he did Family Guy.
He was
Guy
on or... Family Guy, I think multiple times. And then he did that. Was it a Geico commercial?
Yeah, he was those,
just stuff like that. Just love that stuff.
Yeah, just like, let's not take ourselves so seriously. You know, that's the, I love that. When people are like, they're terrific, they're top of their game, but they're, you know, totally approachable and like, you know, not at all pretentious or anything. It's very cool. And there's, you know, if I'm being honest, I've yet to really meet anyone that didn't sort of fit that bill, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure they exist, absolutely. But I haven't encountered anyone that really was a total, you know, D-bag or anything. So
let me, because I'm going to run out of time with you, and I want to. I got to talk about that.
I know what you're talking about now. I was like, there's no way we're 30 minutes or more. Here we are, almost an hour.
Pulling back the curtain a little, he said, "So what do you usually do about 30 minutes?" I'm like, "Yeah, I try for 30 minutes, but it never goes less. It always goes longer."
Yeah.
All right, you've got a great studio there, and I know you had it built. And just tell me a little. Well, let me say the first thing. I saw some pictures of it. You've got three mics in your main booth. Is that just true statement still?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So I have.
Go ahead.
We'll do the kind of quick tech rundown. So I'm on a 416. Yeah. I have a U87 and an M149, which is a Neumann tube microphone.
I couldn't figure out what the M149 was.
Yeah.
I saw the picture and okay.
So that's that's it. Listen, I'm a gear junkie, so the biggest disclaimer on all of this is, you know, if anyone's listening, don't do as I do. You know, you do not need half or really any of this gear other than a microphone and a decent preamp to do voiceover. And those decent preamps are built into our audio interfaces, so, you know, you really don't need any sort of extra bells and whistles and gear, but I sort of dreamed of having them, so therefore I have them.
To some people, microphones are like heroin, and while you wish you could quit them,
yes,
you can't.
And a sidebar, NAMM, Winter NAMM started today, the gear show in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's deadly for someone like me who's like, ooh, what are they coming out with? That literally I do not need anything else. I really don't. I could sell most of this studio and still get the work done. But, you know, I love the bells and whistles. I love the toys. I love just looking at the lights and stuff. So I have those three mics are sort of my main voiceover mics, I would say.
Did I cut you off? What was your third mic? You have the 416.
416, the Neumann U87 and a Neumann M149. So the M149 is a big tube microphone. I have myself convinced that if I, you know, do any big movie trailer actiony type stuff, I might use that mic because it's got a really nice big bottom end and maybe more of the voice of God.
What are you on right now?
I'm on the 416.
Okay.
And that's into an Avalon 737 with a little bit of tweaking, little EQ, little compression, not much, but just a little taste.
For anybody that cares, I'm on a 416, which is into nothing, into a single mono track in Pro Tools.
There you go. So we're set up very similarly. And then I have the U87, which I like. It's a little bit more neutral sounding mic, a little bit more sort of natural reproduction. So again, I have myself convinced that if I do kind of commercial work or anything where I have to be more regular guy, not sort of amped or processed promo sound, I would use the U87 with, you know, yet less processing. And then again, the M149 is that sort of big bottom end, sort of larger than life sound. Yeah. And so that was the justification. I mean, certainly most of my day is on the 416. And it's...
You're a Pro Tools guy?
Into Pro Tools. I have a Pro Tools HD rig. And so I'm into Pro Tools. I have the HD Omni. In terms of preamps, I've got the 737. I've got a Portico channel, a Portico 2 channel from Rupert Neve. Shelford channel from Rupert Neve, a couple of sort of outboard compressors and things. 1073, a BAE 1073 channel.
Yeah.
And then ISDN box, Telos Zip box. So this is one of my clients switched to this from ISDN. So it's made by Telos, same as the ISDN box. But it's basically like Source Connect in an outside box. So it's okay. IP connection. It's like, you know, it's point to point, and they have a box on their end. But it's, man, I'm to try and keep up with all the different things. We got Source Connect, we got IPDTL, we've got the Zip box, we've still got ISDN for some people.
Still have ISDN.
We've got Skype for phone patch and things like that. So it's amazing to me. I would love for someone to just sort of say, this is the way forward, but it seems to me you have to have all the things.
What kind of a data connection do you have into your place there?
I have two broadband connections from one from the phone company and one from the cable company. Hoping for fiber. We don't have it in our neighborhood yet, so you know I'll be the.
So you have like 100 meg down.
I have 150 down, and or which tests regularly at 170 down, and then like one of them is like 40 up or something. The other one's 10 up, so I use the 40 up. One more readily, I hear of, I've got friends in LA that have fiber, and it's like the full gig pipeline.
Right,
I'm thinking oh man, I would love to have that.
I live a couple miles from fiber people. It ain't at my house though.
No, so this is plenty for what I do. I don't have any dropouts on like Source Connect or anything, so it's, you know, it's still good enough for audio. But
then you have two separate ISDN lines as well.
I have the ISDN box with lines from the telephone company installed in the house, and then I also have numbers through IPDTL. I paid for some extra ISDN numbers, just thinking it'd be good to have. I like them for travel. I got to be honest. I use I actually, because that Zip box, it's harder to find ways to sort of bridge that to from the road. I don't travel much, but when I'm on vacation and stuff, I've actually used IPDTL, and I will ISDN from the road using IPDTL to my home box, and then hard patch my Zip box, and then do sort of my own bridge to my client that uses the Zip thing. So it's cheap enough monthly that it's worth still keeping. If I use ISDN more than twice a month, I'd be, you know, it would shock me.
Do you have any idea working with a lot of various different promo? Because I think in the promo world is where all of that kind of stuff is getting used the most.
Yeah, and more people are moving away from it. So, you know, CBS used to be strictly ISDN, and they're now Source Connect.
I was going to ask, like, what's the trend that you're witnessing? Is everybody going to one thing?
No, well, it's interesting. And then I did some work for Fox, and they're still ISDN. And didn't seem like they were changing that anytime soon. So I'm not on Fox right now, but I hope to be again on a different show. And so you go, well, if they ever pick me for something else, I better still have ISDN, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's this tricky thing. There's ways around it. IPDTL has been very stable for me. And the fact that they offer this sort of virtual ISDN connection, I think is the perfect scenario for people that don't want to or can't get the ISDN installed. They can just sort of get an IPDTL subscription and use it when they need it. It sort of gives the illusion that you have actual ISDN.
When you're on the road, what do you bring with you? A 416? I'm going to get.
Yeah, I've got the 416. I've got the Portabooth from Harlan Hogan. I've been looking at other things. I see this Isovox thing from Sweden that looks interesting. But the Portabooth Pro, a little pop-up tent with foam on the inside. I like that. I have a moving blanket that I bring with me that I sort of put up as a baffle behind me. I usually get the hotel.
That works for you pretty well.
Clothing rack or something, and drape that, sort of make a little like a gobo in studio speak, and put a little sort of baffle behind me to sort of help with some of the reflection. Mm-hmm. 416, and then I have the Apollo Twin from Universal Audio. The reason I like the Apollo, I switched from the Apogee One. I like the size of the Apogee One, but I really liked the Unison preamps of the the twins. So I've actually got myself set up. So I'm recording on a 1073 quote unquote preamp.
I was going to say, or you could put the Vox box on there or.
Yeah, exactly. Get the Manly and sort of dial it in. I've sort of dialed in a combination of EQ and compression and things via my UAD plugins. That sort of mimic what I do at home on the Avalon and stuff. It's never going to be exact, but, you know, it gives me sort of a similar taste of what I give to people when I'm at home.
What could I do what could I pay you or do with my body to get you to screenshot your settings on your plugins there and see how you set up your UA?
You have to remind me how to do screenshot. I literally have to Google it every time. It's what? It's shift option 3 or something.
I change my modifier keys on my keyboard because I'm an old PC guy. For me, it's control shift 3, but, or wait, is it 3 or 4? Anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'll bug you later.
I would be happy to. there's nothing special about it. It's sort of dialed into. Yeah. You know, a little bit of top end, like 18K or 20K or something, just a little bit of shine, just that little sparkle.
For sure.
Little low end boost. I find my voice at 75 hertz is sort of, there's a sort of a sweet spot that I like to bring out a little bit. So it's like 2 or 3 dB in that range.
Okay.
And then I bring up maybe by a dB a little bit of the mid range, just so it's not a total smiley face.
And you're not bringing the high end up at all, is that what you said?
About 20K. The Avalon is a they've got the third on the Avalon, they've got the 32K, which is like supersonic,
right?
But I find it gives a nice air,
oh really,
real sort of polish. Okay. So I've got that up by 3 dB,
okay,
at 32, so just a little bit of sparkle.
Dude, yeah, I was gonna say, put a tiny little bit of sizzle there on the high end, that's always good.
Yeah, it just brings up I feel like on the 416, there's already a really nice sort of EQ curve naturally in the microphone.
Yep.
I do about 3 dB of compression, and then into the EQ. I roll off sort of the muddy, anything below about 40.
Sure. Yep.
On the high pass, and then that's about it.
What about?
And I sort of mimic that with an LA2A compressor and a the Millennia. EQ from UAD that's has similar frequency corners to the Avalon, so it was more picked about trying to find that
cool
sort of roughly what I use at home. Man, I hope they come. You know, if UAD models the Avalon like they have with the Vox box and things, yep. I'll just switch to that probably.
I would buy it the day they do. Yeah. What about gating on the road? Do you do that?
I don't do any gating. I just try and keep it, you know, keep room noise to a minimum. I turn off AC and stuff and try and be away from windows and things where you're going to get the exterior noise. Just stop talking if the vacuuming is happening. I find like most of my clients are flexible enough that I can sort of pick a few hours window and say, you know, let's try and record in this pocket. For whatever reason, it always seems to be the exact time that someone's vacuuming in the hallway. So, you know, that's hard to work around.
Can you take a weekday off?
Try not to.
But you can't, right? You really can't.
I wouldn't know. I haven't tried. You know, as bonkers as it sounds, I worked the day my daughter was born. I worked 3 hours a day for my honeymoon in Aruba. So, you know, it's just like, you just don't want to push it, right? You know, you hear these horror stories. Now, for those that are thinking he's a terrible father and husband and whatever else, the day my daughter was born, she came very fast. Mom and daughter were doing very well. My mom and my mother-in-law had already joined us at the hospital, so my wife had lots of company. I needed to come home and feed the cats anyway. So it was kind of like, hey, you know, CBS needs me.
I don't think you have to justify your fatherliness, but I get what you're saying.
No, but you're like, hey, someone would be like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You shouldn't worry. You know, it just sort of worked out. I was totally prepared to be like, we had everyone knew that soon my wife, you know, would be giving birth and just sort of, you know, a few weeks out just said like, I might just not be available for a period of time. And everyone was generally just very understanding and like, oh yeah, we'll figure it out. But it just so happened that, you know, it's kind of like, well, all the excitement, you know, it came again. My daughter arrived very, very fast. So we were like, okay, everyone's
good for your
good.
Wife.
I'm going to zip home, she was, my wife was awesome. And like I said, yeah. she had company and, you know, the nurses were great. And I had to come home. We don't live far from the hospital, so I had to zip home, feed the cats. So, yeah, why not, let's do 15 minutes of CBS while we're at it.
Why not? Make a couple bucks, yeah. have a child. It's a Tuesday.
It's yeah. perfect. It was a Thursday, but it was a perfect.
Thursday. Yeah.
but yeah, great. No, I mean, it's, yeah, I always, any travel that I do, I fly on weekends. And stay long enough that I won't have to be in the air during the week. And, you know, I just really don't push it. Mm-hmm. I know others do, and it works out fine for them. And I'm sure it would be, you know, if it was in moderation, I'm sure it wouldn't be detrimental. But
And I know others that don't leave, that they don't leave. They're, yeah. you know, they have that mindset of I try
and have somewhere in the middle because yeah. I don't think that's a very yep. fun life.
Right.
You know, it's nice to be able to go play. We have the flexibility. Listen, I don't have to ask anybody if I can go on vacation. If my wife wants to go away for a week and we go somewhere warm, we go to Maui, pick somewhere that's got a walk-in closet and
there you go.
You know, set up and, you know, be as good as possible. You
yeah.
know, the sound, there's so many technological advances now. You can get like the iZotope RX plugins and things where... you know, on the other end, the audio engineers that I record with, they can usually kind of dial out most of any sort of unwanted room reflection and stuff to the point where let's be honest, with promo and trailer, we're compressing and slamming voice up against music and sound effects and things anyway, so it gets sort of buried
for sure
under a lot of that stuff.
You so, might not yeah. want, yeah, I wouldn't want to record a, whatever, an audio book, but I get what you're saying. I
know yeah, you don't want it where it's cold voice. yeah. You prefer not to, but in promo land especially, yeah. it's kind of like, it's good enough for a week. It allows me to be away and have some fun with my family and still sort of service my clients.
And get that, get that young Sheldon money.
exactly.
<yeah. laughs> hey, man, this is awesome. I got to let you go at some point. I can't keep talking to you forever.
Well, we could. Right. I'm sure there's more to talk about, but why there don't we is. Do a part two if we think of stuff?
I'd love to.
If this is your most downloaded episode ever,
okay.
then I promise I'll come back for a part two.
Okay. Not to toot my show's own horn, but that's a tall order these days. I've had some pretty popular folks on, so we'll,
I don't doubt.
We'll have to get it out there.
I don't anticipate that it will be, not because of you, but because of me.
But, you yeah, know, right.
Hey, maybe. So,
hey,
anyways,
let me get one last question out of you.
Sure.
I try to yeah. remember to ask this to everybody at the end, and you can make this as short and sweet as you want.
Sure.
If you're gonna lay it all or bring it all down to one single key piece of advice to the next Graham Judd, what is that advice for them to be successful in this industry?
Yeah. Sort of a lot of obvious things, and this may even feel obvious, and I know others
it's
have
okay.
said it.
But yeah.
But for me, the biggest thing in the last few years that's really kind of cemented is at least the internal feeling of like being confident is that you just got to find your signature, find that signature sound. And I think that it goes to all the different genres of voiceover. Maybe in animation, it's like find your million signature sounds.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, I think it's that find a way to be authentic. I think it'll be a longer lasting thing. I know people that do pretty good imitations of promo, what they think promo people should sound like or trailer people. And I hear of them booking the occasional work and whatnot, but I also hear about that they didn't last because they sort of did a read and it wasn't really flexible,
mm-hmm.
you know? So the biggest thing, the best thing about finding sort of an internal kind of grounding or like a centering on all your work is that you can pivot. And I pride myself on now, especially being able, you know, working every 2 weeks on reads is if someone directs me and says, you know, I love that read, but can it be 5% brighter or happier or something, you know, and gives this like just tweaking, mm-hmm. I can be really micro targeted because it's all sort of based in reality. It's based in authenticity.
Right.
And that's such a huge thing. And I don't think everyone gets that. I think a lot of people think voiceover, especially genres like promo and trailer, is just you sound like, you know, if you're doing a promo, it sounds like this. Maybe for some it does sound like that, but for me, I'd much rather book. I think you last longer if you book based on you.
Yeah, man, love
it. If you get an opportunity and then you kind of cement it, and then no one can sort of take it away from you. They'll change. The creative tastes change. And someone says, hey, let's go older. Let's try a woman. All valid creative choices. And that absolutely happens. And it happens to me and it'll happen. And, you know, it will continue to happen. But I think your best shot at sort of having a lasting, staying presence in the business is, again, and probably production, like have an authentic sound.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
and
man.
Build from there.
Yeah, that's great. At Graham Judd. Oh, I don't think I did it in my intro, but GraemeJudd. That's you on Twitter at Graham Judd. GraemeJudd.com. They can check out. You're pretty good at putting your recent work there too.
So that's, yeah, I would say cool. Website, if you're interested, is probably the most up to date thing. Twitter.
You're not a big Twitter guy.
I'm not a social. I just don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. That's cool.
When I do share, it's something unrelated. It's very rarely of value. But maybe that's part of the New Year's resolution, is getting better on those platforms.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'll make it one of these days, Graham. I have high hopes for you. You're gonna.
One of
these.
If only I could get my Twitter account
exactly,
in order, then
saying,
I would maybe go somewhere.
Yep, there you go. I'm going to have that YouTube video on the website. I'm also going to put a link to some of that, the posting about your studio there as well, because some of these tech geeks like me are going to be interested in that. So there we go. One final time. Graham Judd, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, and thanks for having me.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.